Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Healthcare Disparities Conference. Just as a reminder, today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to your host for today, Ms. Nicole McKelvin. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, everyone. This is Nicole from NQF. Thank you so much for joining us for our call today. This is the Healthcare Disparities and Cultural Competency Steering Committee conference call, just so you're aware if you dialed in. As traditional with most of our conference calls, we do also have the webinar platform that is has a few slides that I'll be projecting as we talk through the measure. So feel free to join the webinar if you do have the capabilities. If not, you can very easily follow along with the materials that was sent to the committee last week. So what we circulated to the group in preparation for this call was the preliminary reviews of the measure. So the entire committee was invited to review the measure in depth and provide their ratings and rationale. And so the summary from that output has been provided to the group, along with some supporting documents around our discussion for related and competing measures. We will be discussing some of the other two measures that have been recommended for endorsement that also address cultural competency a little bit later on in the call. So our goal then today for today's call specifically will be to evaluate the cultural competency implementation measure against the NQF evaluation criteria. And then, as I mentioned, we'll also discuss any related measures that are also focused on cultural competency. The format for this call will be similar to the discussion format that we had during the in-person meeting. So the measure developer, which is RAND, is here on the call with us and will first provide a brief introduction to the measure. And she will be available throughout the duration of the call for any questions that the committee may have during the discussion process. For this measure, again, the entire committee was invited to do the preliminary review and ratings. So we haven't selected a lead discussant. We're just expecting the group to sort of jump in with comments, or if someone wants to volunteer when we get to that point to lead us off, that would be great. One thing that will be different is we will not vote on this measure during the conference call. What will happen is immediately following the call, I will send out a link to an online survey that will allow the committee to provide their vote for the criteria as well as your vote on overall recommendation for endorsement. And finally, just so the group is aware, our co-chairs, Dennis and Denise, both unfortunately were not available for the call today, but Dr. Kevin Susela has willingly accepted the temporary assignment of co-chair for the day, so he will be assisting to moderate the discussion throughout the call when we go through the measure. Were there any quick comments or questions?
We know your time is valuable, and we appreciate your patience.
Nicole, the web link is in your is in the materials you sent out, right, for those who want to?
Yes, that's correct.
Bottom of the page.
The web link can be found in the agenda, and it was also provided in the email that I sent out to the committee last week.
At the very bottom.
So again, briefly, what I wanted to do was also just provide a quick overview of our evaluation criteria. This is probably very fresh in many people's minds, but for those who were not at the meeting, I just want to review this again. Again, on this slide, you can see that those four major criteria shown in hierarchy, the first being importance to measure and report. One of the key components that you'll talk through under importance is the evidence to support the measure focus. And the importance criteria is a must-pass criteria. The second is scientific acceptability of the measure properties. This is where the committee will consider the testing around reliability and validity. Next is usability. So this is focusing on how useful the measure is for the intended audiences that it has been designed for. And finally, feasibility, which looks more at aspects related to implementation of the measure. And I just want to mention to those on the phone, if you're not speaking, if you could place your line on mute. We just had a little bit of static coming through. And finally, before we begin the discussion of the measures, the committee should be aware that this measure that we're going to be discussing today, it was derived from the NQF-endorsed Cultural Competency Preferred Practices. This set of practices was reviewed by our previous NQF steering committee, and that group evaluated and recommended these set of practices based on evidence, scientific acceptability, usability, and feasibility, and subsequently they were endorsed. For this measure, there were 13 of those 45 endorsed practices that were used to comprise the RAND measure. The selection of those 13 practices was done by an NQF expert panel convened specifically for that purpose. We recognize there may be some specific questions about the practices, but because of the conflict, since those practices are an NQF-endorsed product, we feel it will be best to limit our comments during the discussion other than the statement that was just made. And just again, just so you know that the practices are NQF endorsed and have been included in the measure. The steering committee's discussion should really focus on the measure itself as it's been constructed, tested, and presented in the submission form. So I will now turn it over to Kevin, who will be leading the discussion. Just as we did for the in-person meeting, we have the ratings, the preliminary ratings around the criteria shown on the screen here. And you can obviously refer to the summary document that provides a little more verbiage around different comments from committee members who reviewed the measure previously during the discussion. So Kevin, I'll turn it over to you to lead us off and get the ball rolling.
Thanks, Nicole. So why don't we just go through the ratings that were sent out and start with the first one, which was importance to measure and report. And
I'm sorry, this is Beverly Woodmer. Can I interject for just a minute?
Sure.
Nicole, I don't know if you still want me to provide a five-minute overview of the measure.
Yes, absolutely. I'm so sorry, Beverly. I didn't mean to skip you.
Oh, sorry, and I apologize, Kevin, for interrupting.
No, I appreciate it.
So this is Beverly Woodmer from the RAND Corporation, and we were the lead in developing this survey measure. And in brief, I'm going to provide you with an overview for the process for developing and testing the measure. So as Nicole mentioned, we developed this survey measure to closely align with a cultural competency framework and preferred practices that are included in the NQF report on preferred practices for measuring and reporting on cultural competency. And that document, along with recommendations made by the NQF expert panel, were the foundation for the development of the survey measure, as Nicole explained. The primary goal of the survey measure is to assist healthcare organizations in identifying the degree to which they're providing culturally competent care and addressing the needs of diverse populations, as well as their adherence to 12 of the 45 NQF-endorsed cultural competency practices prioritized for the survey. As Nicole mentioned, 13 of those were identified by an expert panel in the process of testing in consultation with NQF, we agreed to drop one of the practices from the survey, and so the survey itself focuses on 12 of those 45 practices that were endorsed by NQF. In developing the survey, we not only reviewed the practices in detail and looked at existing measures that are out in the public domain that we could consult and perhaps adapt. We also conducted two rounds of cognitive testing with healthcare organizations to try to understand how they are understanding the measures and to make sure that the measures are, you know, easily understandable as well as valid in terms of we collected extensive information on the types of things that they do and how they really constructed their responses to each of the survey measures. So we conducted two rounds of cognitive testing. We also sought input from the same expert panel that identified and prioritized the measures to include in the survey. On the survey measure itself, they provided us feedback, and based on that feedback, we made significant revisions to the survey. And then finally, the main testing process was to conduct a web-based field test of the survey measure that included 269 different organizations. One of the main goals in developing the survey measure was to understand and test whether the survey measure can actually be used across healthcare settings, as well as, of course, as to understand whether organizations understand the measures in the same way, whether it can be administered without the assistance of an interviewer, whether the information that's collected from the survey is actionable, is not subject to varied interpretation, and also, you know, to assess the degree of burden on organizations that complete the survey. So the field test was conducted in the fall of 2011. Again, it was a web-based field test in which we surveyed 269 different organizations that included hospitals, dialysis centers, federal qualified health centers, health plans, and integrated health systems. The field test was successful in that we were able to collect enough information to conduct the psychometric analyses that we wanted to conduct to evaluate the measure. But admittedly, we did only achieve a fairly low response rate of 18%. Let me think, what else can I tell you about the survey measure? Let's see. Following the field test, we did provide the participating organizations their scores. The scores, we looked at them to ensure that there were no ceiling effects, and we did find that the max score was 97.5 on the, you know, total survey score. The minimum score was 17.2. The mean score was 65, and the median score was 68.5. So there were, you know, a range of scores across the, you know, 50 or so organizations that actually completed the survey. And we were pleased to see that, you know, overall there weren't overly high scores to the survey indicating, you know, kind of ceiling effects. And I think I'm past my 5 minutes, so I'm going to stop here. And Kevin, I'll let you go on and I'll answer any questions that the committee has as the discussion progresses.
Well, thank you, Beverly. I think that's very very helpful. So why don't we walk through the different categories and just organize the questions based on those, since we have a limited amount of time here. Beginning with the first section, if it's okay with you, Beverly. You have the scoring sheet in front of you, don't you?
I do have it in front of me. Thank you.
So there were a number of comments about importance to measure and report here that were brought up, and so I'll open it up to the committee for people who want to pose those questions now.
Kevin, this is Liz. I'm actually in my car right now. I'm going to end up actually in my office fairly shortly, but it might be helpful if you could maybe review some of those comments.
Sure.
I can't. Thank you.
So there was, in terms of importance, there was 8 yeses and 2 noes. Similarly for impact, 10 rated it highly. Some of the comments related to links between the questionnaire under consideration and differences in processes or outcomes of care. There was also a question that perhaps you could address, Beverly, is that is how great the variability was and if this variability would be believed to be clinically relevant and how one might even think about that question.
So variability in terms of
in terms of responses between between these different groups, the scores by the organizations who were responding.
There was variability in the responses, as I mentioned, both in the overall survey score. As well as in, we provided individual scores for each of the preferred practices, and there was, quite a bit of a variability. However, I don't know that we have enough data to make a statement about whether the variability can be linked to outcomes. Admittedly, again, the field test was a relatively small field test, and we were not able to obtain sufficient numbers of completed surveys by type of healthcare organization to be able to look at that adequately. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, I think it does. So questions from the committee on the first section here. So let's go on then, hearing none, to the second part where there was a little more divergence of opinion. So I think, reading through this, it sounds like there was a consensus that this is important and potentially impactful, even though the evidence is at this point indirect. So going on to the second criteria, scientific acceptability of the measure based on decision logic. So here the committee was split with 5 yeses and 6 noes, and similarly in terms of reliability, 3 highs, 3 mediums, 2 lows, and with validity, 1 high, 5 mediums, 2 lows, and looks like 1 insufficient, or 4 insufficient, I'm sorry. So again, let's open it up to the thoughts that people have in terms of this issue, scientific acceptability.
Yeah, this is Ed Habernick from Denver. I'm really concerned here. I mean, 18% is a very poor response rate. And going beyond that 18%, the response rate was not uniform across the type of organizations. I think, if I'm remembering this correctly from when I reviewed this last week, more than half came from FQHCs, half the responses, and very few came from hospitals, from other sorts of healthcare settings. So what we're really getting is information from a very small sample of organizations that are presumably quite predisposed to have an interest in this area. And, to me, that was a huge red flag.
Yeah, this is Liz Jacobs. I totally agree with that comment. That was also one of my concerns.
Beverly, did you want to respond, or did you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no. I understand the concerns, and I think we recognize that the field test, as I said, not only included a fairly small sample, but also that the response rate was extremely low. although it was low, it's not, it is a low response rate, but it's not an unusual response rate for surveys of organizations also.
Right.
I think, you know, going forward, we are actively going to be looking for additional funding to be able to field the survey with a much larger sample and, again, evaluate the psychometric properties and really be able to look at the data by type of organization as well as across organizations.
There was a really interesting question someone raised about inter-rater reliability. It wasn't clear to me who at organizations answered this survey. And what their qualifications were, what their knowledge were. I mean, I could answer this survey about my organization, and I'm sure I would be wrong about half the time.
Yeah, and we did collect information on who actually completed the survey at each of the participating organizations, and it varied across organizations. At large organizations, it tended to be either the person who was responsible for cultural competency issues or quality improvement, or in some cases it was a person who was responsible for, hospital surveys, for example. In smaller organizations, it tended to be the medical director. In medium-sized organizations, it sometimes was the medical director. It was sometimes someone that the medical director designated, usually someone who was primarily tasked with quality improvement activities at the organization. So it did vary from organization to organization. We did provide instructions that the person who completed the survey should be someone who was knowledgeable about the practices that were going to be discussed as part of the survey. Particularly for large organizations, we also found that it was not possible for one person to complete the survey on their own. So oftentimes they had to consult with different departments and collect information in order to complete the full measure. So for example, even if it might be the person who was responsible for quality improvement, when it came time to answering the questions about language access and interpreter services, they consulted with the head of that department.
This is Grace Ting. You know, I definitely seem to have recalled getting the survey, but maybe it was the survey and maybe it was another field test or survey. But did you have some sort of language in there asking the CEO to be involved in some way, shape, or form? Or am I misremembering this?
The CEO or the director of the organization, we did send the survey to them, and they designated the person who should complete the survey.
Okay, because I remember there was one survey that asked they could designate, but then they still had to sign off. And I know that was a barrier within our company because, you know, I mean, they could designate, but, I mean, ultimately, if there was some sort of sign-off requirement or it had to be entered by the CEO's office, that was just not going to happen. And I think that's why we did not respond.
Yeah. We did request that the person completing the survey attest to the accuracy of the information that was submitted.